This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacia with an offer you can't refuse. We're going to do movies on the radio today, talking about your favorite gangster, mafia, and mob movies. Dissect the films that make you want to live a life of crime, from A Family Business and Married to the Mob to The Crooked Cops of Training Day. Our film experts, Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys, are here to talk about your picks. Marsha, film professor at North Carolina State University. Laura is the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the curator of the Movie Diva series. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Good to have you here. Laura, let's talk about why gangster films endure and they're so popular with audiences like forever.
Yeah, I would like to know the answer to that question myself. I mean, the original appeal of gangster movies is they're kind of the inverse of capitalism. So it's a way of becoming rich without being part of the establishment. But gangsters have nice cars, they have nice clothes, and they kill a lot of people, which actually I find to be quite problematic because I think a lot of America's obsessions with guns, which used to be linked to the Western, has now shifted over to be centered on the gangster film.
What do you think?
And Laura's not alone in that because, I mean, this is a genre that more than any other that I can think of in American history has really sparked anxieties about the representation of violence and crime and easy money.
And differing ethnic groups at different moments in history.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so historically speaking, that was something that people talked about around these films from the time these films first started getting made and during their heydays in the 1930s and the 1940s and the 1950s. And every decade seems to have a burst of gangster films. And it is, they're very contemporary in terms of their references, even if they're always looking back.
And I would say not the inverse of capitalism, but perhaps the quintessence. If you take a look at, The Godfather talks about taking things through violence, and then once you violently take what isn't yours, you legitimize it and turn it into a business, put a suit on it, and call it the American way.
Well, and one of the dangers that people over the course of American history in particular have kind of recognized in the gangster film is often the protagonist is very charismatic. And so the audience might identify with the performer and their ability to do the things that Laura referenced, have mm-hmm. nice clothes, nice cars, a great lifestyle. And then even though they're almost always taken down by the end of the film, there is this kind of romanticism of violence that I think feeds into that as well.
And well, let's go back. Let's go right to our first clip here and take a listen to a clip from Miller's Crossing.
Hi, I'm John Munson. I'm calling from Raleigh. And everybody who knows me knows I want to talk about Miller's Crossing. It's based loosely on a Dashiell Hammett story called The Glass Key. And it's told through the fractured lens of the Coen brothers, that iconic group of filmmakers. It's set in a nameless prohibition city. It's got two rival gangs. They've come to blows over the fate of a crooked bookie. And there's a loyal mob lieutenant who's working this Machiavellian scheme to protect his boss. And man, it's like the gangster film stripped down to its essence.
The Dane, has he got it figured?
You dumping Leo for the guy who put a bullet in your brother?
Bernie, will he turn the tables?
Don't smart me. I want to watch you squirm. I want to see you sweat a little.
All you got to do is show your friend this. Give me Bernie Burnbaum.
Tommy, you can't do this. You don't bump guys. It's not right, Tom. I can't dump.
Oh, but he does. The 1990 Coen Brothers movie Miller's Crossing, Gabriel Byrne, Marcia Gay Harden, and John Turturro star in that film. My guest Laura Boys and Marsha Gordon, this edition of Movies on the Radio.
So I think this is a phenomenal version of the genre. It is ultra violent, ultra gory in many ways, but it has all of the classic elements, and I like the way that John Munson talks about it and distills them down to its essence. I mean, on the one hand, you know, the gangster genre has always been interested in ethnicity. It's one of the few American genres that has really explored that, and so this is a film that has its Irish, its Italian, and its Jewish characters that are jockeying for power. The cinematography in this is beautiful. I mean, if you like machine gun ballets, which I mean, I think in this case, this is in this beautiful scene in the film, beautiful, terrible scene in the film that uses the song Danny Boy for this attempted hit and ends up with this kind of preposterous extended ballet of a machine gun that is a reference back to Scarface from the 1930s. And the other thing I like about this film is so many gangster films have no space for female characters. There's a lot of cruelty towards women, and they're often quite marginal. And it's not that this is some kind of proto-feminist gangster film, but the Marcia Gay Harden role, Verna, it has some meat to it, and she's got some screen time, and that's a little bit unusual as well.
Yes, too violent.
Too
for
violent.
Me.
For, I was going to ask you about all those gunshots.
And also, this is looking back at an older romanticism of gangsters with the 30s cars and suits and all of that.
Let's move on to our next film.
My name is Deborah Owens, and my favorite gangster movie is Dinner Rush with Danny Aiello. It's really a different kind of gangster movie, sort of offbeat. It is a foodie gangster movie, and it takes place in New York City in Tribeca on Hubert Street, and a mobbed up restaurant owner played by Danny Aiello, his son is now the chef at this restaurant, and the restaurant is the Manhattan restaurant of the moment.
How are we doing?
You are a genius, young man.
Thank you. I'm sorry it took so long, but I wanted to make something special. What did you think?
She's thinking about what's coming next. So tell me, chef, what is the history behind this culinary creation?
Actually, it's a dish my Uncle Enrico used to love.
Is that Uncle Enrico on the menu?
Oh, on the menu, no. Hey, Adamir, can I have a menu?
On the menu?
It's a picture of my father and his grandfather playing in a backyard in New Jersey.
Then who's Gigino? Honey, you're asking way too many questions. Can we leave Udo alone,
please? No, it's
all
right. I get asked all the time. It's fine. My father's real name is Luigi. Gigi is the nickname for that, and Gigino is little Gigi. Italians are crazy about nicknames.
There it is from the 2000 film Dinner Rush.
So many scenes in regular gangster movies take place in restaurants. There's always somebody eating and somebody making sure their back isn't to the door.
Well, one of the fun things I think to think about with all of these films, really any gangster film, especially of that kind of following in that tradition of the 1930s gangster films, is the way they create atmosphere. So it's this space and place that most people don't have access to. I mean, gangsters were real. They come from a historical context, and it's why the movies were made about them in the first place, because studios were trying to make, you know, especially Warner Brothers, films that were kind of ripped from the headlines and about contemporary subjects. But, I mean, most of us don't know what it's like to be inside of a kind of criminal underworld. And so to imagine that environment, and so often that's imagined through things like rituals, clothing, decor, and food. And so there's very few gangster films that are made in that ethnic tradition, particularly the Italian, that don't have really, really important dining or banquet scenes, often that end, you know, in some kind of bloodbath, but not always. But that's where a lot of deals are made, and it's over, you know, these beautifully prepared dishes that are important to the culture.
Belly is very important to our next film as well.
Hi, my name is Antonio Taylor. I currently reside in the greater Cincinnati area of Ohio. The movie I wanted to highlight and speak of briefly is called Belly. It's a great gangster movie. It's also a good gangster movie if you're not into gangster movies because, number one, the director of the movie, his name is Hype Williams. He's pretty much known for making music videos. And so with him making this his first movie, it brings a lot of the elements of the music video world into a movie scene and movie format, I should say. And it's a lesson of life and throughout the whole thing.
I represent the truth to the people. Without truth, nothing is sacred. The lie, that's what the devil is all about. And brother, you know that already, because that's why you're here.
What the hell?
The truth is, we all play a grave role in our own destruction. Your money, your lifestyles. Those that fear me send you here, here to murder all that I say. They use what you fear against you.
Now you turn around, bitch! You punk ass motherfucker! Look what you did to me! I hate you! I hate you!
Have you ever thought about how precious a life is?
Now, That is from the 1998 film Belly.
So Miller's Crossing is looking back on this earlier period in gangster film and pop culture history. And films like Belly that were part of a wave of this 1990s urban gangster film that largely centered around African-American communities. And, you know, they're interesting and thorny because there were a lot of debates when they were coming out about the kind of the same issues of romanticization of violence and drugs and easy money. But again, they often always ended with the kind of moral lesson about, you know, crime doesn't pay. And so so this is a branch, I would say, of that original genre from the 1930s that's done in a contemporary context about social issues.
Original genre, you talk about a film from 1912, a D.W. Griffith film.
Yeah, so one of the important precedents to the gangster film is a film called The Musketeers of Pig Alley, which is very easy to find streaming online, which was made in 1912 by D.W. Griffith. And it's the story of this gangster who also has a kind of kind, charismatic aspect to him as well. But he exhibits all of the traits that would become characteristic to the genre, the certain kind of physical affectations, the ability to navigate the world through violence and to build a gang around him. There's a gunfight shootout. There's one of the most beautiful close-ups in the history of film. And so people who are interested in the genre who don't know that film should look it up.
So we've loved gangsters going back to the days of Robin Hood.
That's right.
They're all on our side. Laura Boys and Marsha Gordon. Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, also curator of the Movie Divas series. And Marsha Gordon is a film professor at North Carolina State. More movies from the mob just ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. Mambo Italiano, oh, oh, oh. You mixed up Siciliana, it's so delicious. Everybody come to Pisa, how to mambo Italiano. He's going to miss his train, Frank.
Tommy, don't worry, he'll be here.
This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, talking about your favorite mob, mafia, and gangster films today on Movies on the Radio. Whether you like movies about crime families or con artists, we got you covered. Here's another one.
Hi, this is Chris Middleton from Durham, and I really love The Grifters from the early 90s. It is a gangster movie, more about con artists, really, but it's not a fantasy world. It's very real. You can just feel like these people might actually do what they're doing and live through these situations. The acting is great. Angelica Houston just takes my breath away with her really evil lady.
The manager at your place said your boss called. Really pull the wool over everyone's eyes, huh?
What are you talking about? So I've got a job. So what?
Stop kidding me. 4 years in a town like Los Angeles and a peanut-selling job's the best you can do. You expect me to believe that?
Well, it's there. The boss called. You said so yourself.
That dump you live in? Those clown pictures on the walls?
I like those.
You do not. Roy Dillon, cornball clown pictures, commission salesman. It's all a front. You're working some angle, and don't tell me you're not, because I wrote the book.
You want to talk? You still want to play back money for the mob?
That's me. That's who I am. You were never cut out for the rackets, Roy.
How come? And if
you aren't tough enough.
Not as tough as you, huh?
How'd you get that punch in the stomach, Roy?
I tripped on a chair.
Get off the grift, Roy.
Why?
You haven't got the stomach for it.
From the 1990 movie The Grifters, starring Angelica Houston, John Cusack, Annette Bening, film experts Laura Boys and Marsha Gordon with me now. Is there a difference between a con artist movie and a gangster
film?
Well,
it's how big does a gang have to be? I mean, a con artist is usually a very small gang of people working their angles.
I actually don't think this is really a gangster film at all. It doesn't really have any of... Well, that's not true. It has one to me. It has one to me aspect of the gangster film, and that is this emphasis on family relationships through this complicated, perverse relationship between John Cusack and Angelica Houston. And that is very inherent to the beginning of the genre, this mother figure having usually a very toxic, either overbearing or antagonistic relationship, often kind of strangely intimate, and that's one of the things that happens in The Grifters. But other than that...
crime.
It does have crime, but not in that kind of organized way that I associate with the gangster film. It is, to me, much more of a kind of con artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grifter film.
But the other interesting thing, and you talked about this before, it does involve charismatic characters. I mean, that's essential to the con, right? The charm and the charism. And you really are pulling for them, ultimately. I mean, it's hard not to, you know, sort of Ocean's 11. And
it's hard to resist the charm. That's definitely true.
Let's move on, shall we?
My name is Arlene Young. I live in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And I love the movie Married to the Mob. Because I really do hate gangster movies. I don't watch them. But this one just came right to mind because I remember when it first came out, I saw it, and I've watched it on television a bunch of times since, and it just never fails to entertain. Wonderful cast with Michelle Pfeiffer and Matthew Modine and Dean Stockwell. Great story. Michelle Pfeiffer's character is trying to get away from the mob after they murder her husband. And so she moves into New York City. One of my very favorite scenes is the very last scene in the movie, which is a rather long one, takes place in a hotel room in Miami, Florida, I think, where just about everybody who's been in the movie up to that point, they appear together in a climactic, really farcical scene of all the plot elements coming together all the questions being resolved.
What are you doing here, dark face?
I came here to tell your husband to keep his hands off of my woman.
Connie, don't listen to him. He's a cop. And Angela is working with him.
Watch your back, Uncle Nick! Take him out! Tony Russo, you're under arrest for the murders of Frank DeMarco and Karen Lutnick.
There you go, from the 1988 film Married to the Mob.
Well, as soon as there were gangster movies, there were comedy gangster movies. And at this time, there's a particularly rich vein of them. There's Analyze This with Robert De Niro, who's kind of recapitulating his gangster roles for comedy with Billy Crystal. There's My Blue Heaven, where Steve Martin is in the witness protection program being looked over by Rick Moranis. But there, even in the 1930s, there were comedy gangster movies. It's a way of diffusing the mystique, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that Arlene, like Laura, right, who's like, I don't like this genre, finds the kinds of iterations of this that have the comic aspect that allow you, give you kind of permission to experience this, because there's something about laughter that allows us to, we talked about this with our horror film show, that allows you to experience some darker things because you know the release of laughing is coming.
Right. Any movie that has Joan Cusack and that big teased up hair, I'm okay with that.
Well, and also, I mean, but there is violence. That's the other thing. Another right. to make it funny, you really, in fact, you've got to overdo it in a way, right? You got to spill more blood in a way.
Right. Analyze This as an extremely gory movie for a comedy.
Well, and you could make the argument that that's, in fact, trivializing the representation of violence in a way that some of the more dramatic films don't, but maybe that argument is not what we're going to make.
My name is Juan Grula. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. And my favorite movie since I was probably 12 years old has been Some Like It Hot. It's basically these two guys who witness the a gangland murder. Then they, to escape from being killed, they dress up as women and join an all-female band. It's a romantic comedy, but it's also a gangster film. Screwball comedy with some Marx Brothers thrown in.
If I promise not to be a naughty boy, how about dinner tonight?
I'm sorry, I'll be on the bandstand.
Oh, of course. Which of these instruments do you play?
Bull fiddle.
Oh, fascinating. Do you use a bow or do you just pluck it?
Most of the time, I slap it.
You must be quite a girl.
Want to bet?
My last wife was an acrobatic dancer. You know, sort of a contortionist. She could smoke a cigarette while holding it between her toes. Zowie. But Mama broke it up.
Why?
She doesn't approve of girls who smoke.
It was actually my first gangster film. Those spats that were worn by George Raft in the film definitely made a big impression on me. And to this day, when I think of gangster movies, I always think of his shoes, his spats.
Spats Colombo, delegate from Chicago, Southside chapter.
Hi, Spats. We was laying 8-1, you wouldn't show.
Why wouldn't I?
We thought you was all broken up about Toothpick Charlie.
Well, we all gotta go sometime.
Yeah, you never know who's gonna be next. Okay, Spatz, report to the sergeant at arms.
What for?
Orders from Little Bonaparte.
Ah, Spatz Columbo and Lil Toothpick.
Some Like It Hot is the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. I've seen it, what, 20, 30 times?
Easy.
It never ceases to be a complete delight. There are new details with every watching. Marilyn Monroe is unbelievably great. Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, Joey Brown, who you heard in that clip. But it's also an homage to the older gangster movies with George Raft, Edward G. Robinson Jr., I think, is in it. And actually someone who's supposed to be a cousin of mine, George E. Stone, who is in some of the old movies, and I believe he's in Some Like It Hot as well.
And this is, of course, a Billy Wilder film. I don't think that was mentioned yet. And this is a perfect film for so many reasons, but what it achieves in being a comedy about this is so sublime compared to every other gangster film comedy that you could possibly imagine. And part of it is that the gangster plot in this film is never really threatening to the audience, right? There's never a moment where you're really worried about this kind of violence happening. Everything is kind of trivialized, and so you just get to have the pleasure of seeing these performers go through these zany routines. And it also has, I would argue, the best ending of any film in film history. And so that's an important aspect.
Yeah, well, it's an extremely subversive movie. How Billy Wilder ever got this past the censors.
It's naughty.
Excellent
question. You know, cross-dressing the naughty language.
I know.
Right?
It's so,
but it's all so artfully, it's all double entendre. And that's the best thing, because when you made arguments to the production code administration, they were all subject to interpretation. And so how much fun was it to write this screenplay and think about all the things you were trying to get away with and go, what are you talking about? Are you perverted thinking that?
That's right. It's how you can either bow it or slap it.
Exactly.
What is the question here?
When Tony Curtis in drag kisses Marilyn Monroe on the bandstand, I mean, that's a really exciting moment in film.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Marsha, let's talk about your pick, Little Caesar.
Okay, so I wanted to pick one of the original out-of-the-gate gangster films. So I picked the 1931 film directed by Mervyn LeRoy for Warner Brothers, the studio that would become most aligned with the gangster film genre. And there had been silent gangster films, but the genre really flourished with the coming of sound, which happened in the late 1920s for reasons that might be obvious, but, you know, there's the great slang dialogue of the characters, which you can't really convey through inner titles. There's the sounds of machine guns and tires screeching and people screaming. And so sound was really good for the genre. And so this is one of the kind of a trilogy of films that came out in the early 1930s, the other being Public Enemy and
Scarface.
And Scarface, thank you, the year after, that is focused on these male characters and their rise and fall. And this one's played, this is Rico Bandello, played by Edward G. Robinson, who is obsessed with his status and appearances and being tough and class and has this ruthless ambition. And it is, of course, the story of his rise and the story of his fall.
Rico! All right, see ya, Rico. Little Caesar, that's who. Hey, you're a big guy now. Ain't you shooting your mouth off in the papers? So I ran out when it got hot, huh? You think I can't take it no more? Well, listen, you crummy, flat-footed copper, I'll show you whether I lost my nerve and my brains.
Come on, tell me some more. The sound of your voice does my heart good. Trace that call. Find out where he's phoning from, quick. Say, why didn't you come to Sam's next stretching party, Rico? It was a big success.
Funny guy, ain't you, Flaherty? Well, you ain't got much longer to laugh. I'm coming after you, see, and I'm going to put one in your dirty hide for every lying crack that you made about me in the paper, see? I'm going to show you who's going to finish up in the gutter. I'll show you.
We've missed you, Rico. The town has been nice and quiet. I'm putting on weight.
River, 6547. It's a flophouse down at 4th and Commercial.
All right, big mouth. Honey, better get your hat and start running, see, because you're all through.
You better give up, Rico. You haven't got a chance.
You want me, you'll have to come and get me.
You better be a nice boy, Rico, and come out.
You heard me. If you want me, you'll have to come and get me.
I'll be with you in a minute.
This is your last chance, Rico. Are you coming out, or do you want to be carried out? You should have come out when I told you to, Rico.
Mother of mercy. Is this the end of Rico?
It's a great question. It's a great question. And I mean, yeah. You know, what's interesting to me, there's so many things that are interesting to me about this film, including the relationship between the two male protagonists. It's really about this relationship between men and about loyalty. There's not a romantic interest for Rico. And I'm also just, it's worth observing that the coincidence of the rise of the gangster film with also the Depression. And so this is a time during which people are suffering economically, and to watch these characters just kind of take whatever they want.
Rising up out of the gutter.
Rising mm-hmm. up out of the gutter, even if they end, you know, up in an alley or the gutter really at the end. That must have been quite a thrill at the time.
We talked about Warner Brothers also making sure that their films were, as you say, torn from the headlines. The way the media was, crime stories were huge. They were selling a lot of newspapers. And fascinatingly enough, if you fast forward to 2019 and podcasts, they're all about true crime still.
Interesting.
So the media still propels those stories that then get reflected.
If it bleeds, it leads, Frank. You're in the radio business.
That's how we do it here.
Well, and there was such concern about this rash of gangster films that were coming out in the early 1930s that the production code actually did an amendment for gangster stories between 1930 and 1934 that laid out, you know, you cannot show machine guns anymore, and you cannot show any police officer being killed. You cannot show any details of a crime. And so that amendment, a significant amendment to the code, happened because of this genre of films.
Laura, if it bleeds, it leads is not our motto. Our motto here is if it's news, it's news to us. Let's talk about Jimmy Cagney. We haven't talked about James Cagney, have we? And we need to. Here, a fascinating character who really, in many ways, created the gangster, did he not?
He did. And unlike Edward G. Robinson, Jimmy Cagney really was a tough guy who'd grown up in a rough neighborhood in New York.
And a dancer.
And a dancer, but a multi-ethnic neighborhood. One of his friends went to the chair for murder. He actually knew these gangster people, even though he was not one of them himself.
So in the film Taxi, when he's actually speaking Yiddish to somebody who has befuddled a police officer and the cop doesn't know what to do, and in this scene, it is Jimmy Cagney to the rescue, and the cop intervenes in a moment. Let's listen.
Was gained Ellis Island, the vipers do.
What then? You must Yiddish in you.
No, who's then? I shake it. Pops a crying.
What part of Ireland did your folks come from?
Delancey Street, thank you.
And so what the joke is in that dialogue is that this guy wants to go to Ellis Island and the cop doesn't understand what he's saying. And the guy says in Yiddish, I'm speaking the mama lotion, the mother tongue. And then when he talks to Jimmy Cagney and he says, oh, you understand what I'm saying? He says, what do you think I am? A shagetz? Meaning, what do you think I am? I'm not Jewish. So that's why the cop wonders, what part of...
What part of Ireland he's from. And then the beautiful little, the little dialect that he does there, the kind of little accent that he affects, shows that he grew up somewhere in New York. So, but also talk about this movie, Taxi! Exclamation point, 1932.
Yes, it's it's a union rabble-rousing movie, is it not?
It is. And what's fascinating to me about it is Loretta Young is in this. She plays the romantic interest. Her her father is roughed up by the mob. They want to get involved in the taxi business. Her dad's driving a taxi. He gets his revenge on them. And then they get tear apart his taxi. And she then eggs on Jimmy Cagney and his gang to seek revenge from the mob for taking away the jobs of these working class folk. Now, who would not side with Loretta Young and James Cagney trying to avenge themselves on the mob? And then there's this amazing moment in a 1932, a pure Dirty Harry until this moment in the movie.
A short time ago, I would have felt the same way as Mr. Nolan does. I would have slapped him on the back and encouraged him. But I learned a terrible lesson and it changed my whole attitude. Where has all this fighting gotten us? Nowhere. What have we gained by it? Nothing. There's got to be some other way out, some peaceful way. We can't fight them.
Then what's the idea? I can say I pull a bone of calling you up here. You're not with us. Besides, there's no place for a woman.
What I'm saying is the truth, and you know it.
Shut up. And going back to slinging your hair is just where you belong. You're yellow.
You call me yellow. What do you know about it? Sure, it's swell for you to stand up here and egg people on to go out and break their necks. But wait till it hits home, then you'll feel different.
Let her talk. Don't pay any attention to her, folks. They started this battle. If battle they want, we'll give it to them. What's your old man going to say when he hears how you've been talking? He'll be ashamed of you.
That's a clip from the 1932 film Taxi, starring Loretta Young and James Cagney.
Well, and that's so unusual for her having such a strong voice and presence in this film as well. And, you know, it makes me think about The Public Enemy, which for those of you who have not seen, that has a very famous, very cruel moment where Jimmy Cagney at the breakfast table, his is it his wife at this point, girlfriend at this point? And it doesn't matter.
I think it's his girlfriend.
Yeah, Make says for. Something that that makes him angry, and he takes a grapefruit half and just shoves it in her face. And it's just complete silence. And every time I show this film to my students, you can just feel the room kind of cringing at its cruelty. And that's often, the women in these films are often either kind of sexual objects or they're kind of debased, or it's the mothers. So to have a female character that's so strong is significant.
An exception to that is the Scarface with Paul Muni, because his sister is also a very strong character.
Yes, although that's another dysfunctional, somewhat, incestual relationship between the two of them as well. So it's not, yeah.
But she's a tough broad.
She is a tough broad. Let me just say that maybe Taxi needs to be remade in the Uber and Lyft era. It could have a new life. That idea, my friends, is free. Take it and run.
All right. Marcia Gordon, you heard it first here. Laura Boys is also with us today. Movies on the Radio, talking about mob, gang, gangster films, some of your favorite. By the way, Laura is going to be introducing Mae West in the film I'm No Angel on March 13th. And then Mary Pickford, Rosita, on March 15th, both events at the North Carolina Museum.
No, that's not true.
Mae
West is at the Carolina Theater at 7, and Rosita is at the NCMA at 8.
Carolina, that's part of your Movie Divas series, is it not? And that's some great stuff. So we've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org, but it ain't over yet, folks. There's more to come. Please stay tuned.
Come out and shake it, you dirty yellow-bellied rider. I'll give it to you through the door.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. It is Movies on the Radio today, talking about your favorite gangster, mob, and mafia movies. Film experts Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon are with me to talk about your top picks. Laura, let's take a look at yours, White Heat.
White Heat, yes. One of the things I find fascinating about this movie is so many gangster movies are about daddy issues, and this is one that's definitely about mommy issues. James Cagney plays a psychopath, who has been raised to be a criminal by his mother, who was actually based on a real-life criminal, Ma Barker, who raised her sons up to be criminals like her in the 1930s. There's a scene in which he sits on her lap and she rubs his head, and it's definitely the most potent emotional relationship he has in the film is with his
mother.
Let's
listen to a different clip from that very same film.
A cop. How do you like that, boys? A cop, and his name is Fallon. And we went for it. I went for it. Treated him like a kid brother. And I was going to split 50-50 with a cop. Maybe they're waiting to pin a medal on him.
Solid gold. Come on, get up. Get your hands up.
Yeah, that's it. A nice gold medal for the cop. Only maybe he's going to get it sooner than he thinks.
Down he goes. Laura Boys pick favorite mob movie, 1949 hit, White Heat.
Yes, it's really a bold performance because Cagney goes all out doing things that even scared some of the extras in some of the scenes.
I mean, he is at his most perfect gangster at this moment in this film. I mean, you just could not ask for a better performance. And there are so many. This is such a beautifully made film. The cinematography is gorgeous. There are moments that are so memorable, like when Cagney is in prison and, of course, he has this network for getting information in and out. And they're at the long dinner table one night, and he whispers down, about the new guy who just came in, ask him how my mom's doing. The whisper goes down and it comes back to him. And the answer is she's dead. And of course, this triggers because of this mother relationship, a complete fit and a kind of violent outburst where he's like superhuman.
A mental breakdown.
Right. Yeah, superhuman, just kind of punching everyone around him. But it's just handled so artistically. This is really one of the best of the gangster films.
Violent, and he's also has to sell the fact that he's a mama's boy. And as you say, there's these intimate, you know, somewhat daring scenes with his mom also makes that work. Right?
I mean, you can't imagine Humphrey Bogart sitting on his mother's lap. I mean, no one could sell it the way Cagney could.
Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing too about that mother role is that when Cagney's, you know, doing his time, she is out in the world trying to make these things happen, and that's when she's vulnerable. And she gets taken out actually by Cagney's wife, who's one of the femme fatale evil gangster malls.
Hi, this is Evelyn McCauley. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And my choice for my favorite gangster movie is Training Day. It was filmed in 2001, starring Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. And the reason for my feeling this is the ultimate gangster is the main character is someone who lives by his own rules. He's iron-fisted, he's unpredictable, he's treacherous, he's charismatic, he's seductive, and it's an incredible study of this innocent cop being slowly drawn into the corruption of this gangster-type corrupt cop.
Shoot him.
Oh, man. Youngsters these days, huh? You're not gonna shoot him?
Oh,
all right, give it to you. Rookies.
Yeah, you want to get done, you got to get it done yourself.
All right, Jeff. You took fire coming through the door. I need some time off, but... Okay, whoa, okay? Watch the shades.
All right.
Okay.
You ready?
Kiss me, baby.
One.
Oh! All right, here's the scenario, all right? Let me quarterback this thing. Mark, Paul, you kick the door in. Jeff's the first one through. Roger opens fire, bang, bang. Hits Jeff twice. Our new guy, Hoyt, he's in second, drops Roger with some fine shotgun work. Who shot Roger?
New guy, came in spraying.
Paul.
Boot shot him.
What'd you guys see?
Hoyt blasted him. 11:49, 998. Shots fired. Officer down, repeat. Officer down. 5951 Baxter Street.
That's 2001, Training Day with Denzel Washington.
Who won an Oscar for this?
It's such a good performance, and I really like, this is not at all a film that you would instantly think of as a gangster film, but I like the way Evelyn talked about it, because this is about power, and it's about having this kind of authority that we don't associate with detectives, we don't associate with police officers, so it's kind of usurping the model of gangland for with, you know, as a way to combat it theoretically. But of course it ends up being an abuse of power, as in the scene that we just heard. But it's a really nice version of it. Very bloody.
I'm really struck by the different sounds that the gunfire makes throughout this history of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that it's necessarily, I mean, guns certainly must have sounded different over the last century or so, but they're used. The sound is used for emphasis in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very interesting.
That is a fascinating thought.
Machine gun in particular in those 1930s films, which sometimes, I mean, that's what Miller's Crossing is referring to in that absurd, wonderful scene, but just those kind of long sequences where you're just overwhelmed by the sound of the machine gun and then the visuals of what damage it causes.
But that single shot that we just heard, there's some sort of flinching and pain that goes along with the sound of that single shot.
Yeah, because you hear now that, I mean, I'm trying to think back and what's the difference in the Tommy gun. What you see is the flash, and what you hear is the sound that makes the flash. So it's what's coming out of the gun. In these single shots, especially with these automatic weapons, these, you know, super weapons, you hear the impact on the body, and that's the thing that is more shocking in some ways than hearing the bullet leave the muzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's one of the reasons in some ways that they were so upset about this in the 1930s and tried to tried to remove those sounds. And certainly the image of that is that there's like an abstraction to that violence where the impact is not kind of really seen, except for in this very kind of distanced way. It's much more theatrical.
But three cheers to Laura for pointing out that it came through the ear and not the eye.
This is Kathy Zinn from Pittsburgh, North Carolina. And one of my favorite crime gangster movies is The Untouchables from 1987. It's a very violent movie, and I usually hate violent movies, but in this movie, the violence is almost beautiful. It's very stylized by the director, Brian De Palma. And I cannot get it out of my mind about the slow motion scene, for instance, that played when a baby carriage was caught in the middle of a crossfire of a shootout. Robert De Niro as Al Capone was one of the scariest portrayals of evil that I have ever seen. And again, I'll never forget the scene where he goes around the table of his henchmen looking for whoever the betrayal was, and the way he takes care of that betrayer is something I hope that I never see again.
A man stands alone at a plate. This is the time for what? For individual achievement. There he stands alone. But in the field, what? Part of a team. Sunny day, stands are full of fans. What does he have to say? I'm going out there for myself. But I get nowhere unless the team wins.
Team.
That is a baseball bat against a human skull.
Thank you for explaining that to me, Frank. I really appreciate that.
I don't think you needed to either. It was pretty clear, right? Yeah.
It's really fascinating how many of these movies refer to Al Capone. It's like he's the founding father of the whole gangster genre.
Yeah.
Because Little Caesar is Al Capone. Is right. Miller's Crossing Al Capone? Some Like It Hot has Al Capone.
Well, he is certainly the most well-known kind of pop culture imagination right. of it for reasons that have to do with the media and the way the media treated him in the time period and then the way Hollywood recycled that. Right?
And let us remember that as big a gangster as he was, he did go to jail for tax evasion.
That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, and to talk about just very briefly the Untouchables, first off, that scene that the caller referenced is actually – oddly enough, a reference to Sergei Eisenstein's Battleship Potemkin with the baby carriage going down the stairs, a kind of recreation of that scene, which is somewhat inexplicable given that it's a gangster film. I'm not entirely sure why De Palma wanted to do that, although maybe that's somewhat in keeping with his filmmaking.
Well, see, this is the thing. So much of these movies are about cool imagery. Oh, that looks really cool. And then to recapitulate Battleship Potemkin as a gangland revolution, it just is like a filmy inside
thing.
Yeah, that
thing. Seems like a throwaway. But anyhow, but this is another kind of subcategory of the law and order perspective on the gangster film and how you enforce and how you, you know, take down the kind of gangsters as opposed to just the rise and fall within the system.
Hi, my name is Mark Beasley. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And the movie I would suggest is Branded to Kill by Shinji Suzuki. It's a early 60s movie, gangster film, that wasn't well known in America until the 80s when it came out on videotape. It's one of the strangest films that you'll ever see, but it is truly amazing if you are a movie buff at all. It was very influential for modern directors like Quentin Tarantino. Shinji had been a B-movie director that wasn't progressing, and they told him this was as far as he was going to go. So he took his next two films, one being Branded to Kill, and just made the film he wanted to make. Unusual things happen in this movie, unusual characters, and it actually happens to be a hitman film on top of it.
It keeps going like that, but we're talking about the film Branded to Kill, a Japanese film directed by Shinji Suzuki.
So this truly is one of the most eccentric, unusual films that you will ever see should you choose to go down this path. It is not for everyone. I mean, lots of sex and violence and kind of perversion of all sorts, but man, is it stylish. This is a film that is style first and foremost, and absolutely you can see when you watch it the influence on filmmakers like Tarantino, as Mark pointed out.
So I watched this on Amazon Prime this week. It is so weird.
It's so weird. did the weirdness overcome the violence for you?
Yes and no. I mean, there are like lots of naked screaming women in it. The femme fatale is obsessed with death, I guess, because she's a fatale. But she like drives around with a bird, a dead bird with a needle through its neck hanging from her rearview mirror. And her whole house is like an art installation with all these dead butterflies and moths all over it. And the whole dead butterfly thing is a theme that recurs through the movie. And, you know, this for me is a problem when things become so gorgeously stylized, but they're about cruelty, which is my problem with Quentin Tarantino, too. It's like, can't you bring that enormous level of stylistic accomplishment to a story that doesn't involve so much brutality?
Well, maybe this is the way to bring us to the brutality that we can't face any other way. Without the style, there's no way we can come to this essence, this very important part of human.
You made it through.
Why?
You made it through. This is also a movie that that uses the cooking of rice in ways that I believe no other film
I believe has done. That is correct.
Well, we're
going
to have to save that for another program. I'm going to come to the last clip here. But before we do that, let me point out, no Goodfellas and no Godfather. None. I didn't get a single.
And no Scarface with Al Pacino either.
Yeah. Mercifully.
However, there was Casino.
So my name is Scott Crawford. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And I chose Casino as my favorite all-time gangster movie because it's one of my favorite eras and also one of my favorite rackets. The clash between Midwestern gangsters and the gaming commission in Las Vegas and the way that the casinos were being skimmed, to me, was just a fascinating subject to study in gangster movies. And Scorsese absolutely nailed the details of how that all went down, but also just really captured, put you right in that era, that late 70s, even early 80s era.
I had one of the biggest casinos in Las Vegas to run, the Tangiers.
Look at this place, it's made of money. What do you think about me moving out here?
I just gotta tell you, it's no joke out here. You gotta keep a low profile. Right off the bat, they don't like guys like us.
They had it all. They ran the show, and it was paradise while it lasted.
I think it's actually an underrated gangster movie. I think most people gravitate toward Goodfellas because it came out first, and definitely one of Scorsese's great films. But Casino, I think, really captured a different era and a different racket.
Casino, 1995, directed by Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Sharon Stone.
Man, I could not agree more. This is such a good film. I mean, and I agree that it deserves to be right up there with Goodfellas. And of course, Scorsese became the director most associated in, you know, the last 30 or so years with the genre. In terms of what it does well, I mean, the performances are unbelievable. Joe Pesci is the most perfect performer, character actor in this film. Just nails every. He's like the Jimmy Cagney of Casino. And also the atmosphere, the costumes. I mean, the set design, everything about this film is so perfectly created. And it makes me realize what a master of atmosphere Scorsese and the people he works with in set and costume really are.
Well, as a little coda, I would just like to say most crime is not glamorous. Most people involved in crime do not look like Sharon Stone and Robert De Niro and these people. In fact, my cousin Marty was involved in the rackets in Cleveland. He decided to run his own lottery. His mother's house was full of books filled with $100 bills. But guess what? You're not allowed to do that. So Marty just plain went to jail. No glamour involved at all.
Well, but what I like about what Scorsese does in Casino is he takes all of those conventions that he knows so well, the rise and the fall, and he does something so different with what happens to De Niro's character. It's just this wonderful diminishment instead of this complete explosion. And also, as you could hear from that clip, the music is perfect in this film.
Next time we meet, we'll talk about your favorite tearjerker. What made you cry? Now, Laura, you're going to be okay with those.
Well,
just
let me
sad.
Tell
Unless
you the list of movies that do not make me cry would be much shorter.
All right.
We'll do that another time.
That's the next time. Laura Boys, by the way, introducing Mae West in the film I'm No Angel on March 13th. That's at the Carolina Theater. And then Mary Pickford and Rosita 15th at the North Carolina Museum of Art. All of it's at our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
State of Things is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia. Show.